when you are sitting for the first practice, seeing the sound intervenes very strongly, see what to do then. I told you, if you cannot bear that strong sound, it is better to divert your attention to seeing. That will polish down, I mean.
Instead of divert mind to seeing?
Yes, to seeing. I mean, lessen the, I mean, unbearableness of the thing. Or, leave that portion, let the sound, follow the sound that will drag you into the beyond. See? Either of the two, which you like. If sound is very strong, then you cannot bear, then just divert your attention to see. See? That will, I mean, that unbearableness will go. That will become bearable. Or, follow it. That will drag you into the beyond. You follow?
Yes. You
need not, you may sit at the same, I mean, position, the same position, that makes no difference. Sitting position is always better because it is the position of the child in the womb of the mother. In that case, you withdraw. You simply begin to sit on feet. Your soul will withdraw. That's the sitting position. That privilege.
So I should change. If I'm going to listen, I should change.
All right, you just take the fingers from the thumbs from your ear and see. Repeat the name. That will follow it. Or if you follow it, that will drag you into the ground. Go and master will be waiting for you. Yes?
Master, how should one conduct oneself in the presence of a master?
That's a different position, you see, each man's own advancement. I think by questioning what I have seen, we put one question, one phase of it. He replies that. You simply give up all questions, simply hearing. And become receptive. All your questions will be replied. As I told you, that I only put two questions to my master, all through life. First was about visualizing master's form, that I told you. The other was, what is the proof that this science will be alive, remain alive after you? And he said, whomsoever I will order, I am responsible, for others I am not. These are his words. And then I further put him the question, in what form he will be? He said, he is in sick form. So what about the sick of the attitude? So these are all the questions. I learnt all simply looking into him and hearing what he said. Now this is not the fate of everybody who has stepped into the intellectual plane. He must have why I am here for, he must understand the why I am here for of things. See? He should put in, clarify all questions. Because he won't be able to take up the way unless he is intellectually satisfied. He's got some proofs. So it's better only to clear your heart. As I told you, generally, there is one learned man, the other is unlearned man. And there is a stair under the stair to reach the top of the building. The one who is all right, if you go up to see sun, go up. The unlearned man goes, starts going up, you see. And the unlearned man says, well, first of all, give me any example, any evidence from anybody that is, I see sun when I go up, one thing. Then say, well, suppose my what is said, then what to do. You see? You like to understand. Then he puts in a day to go 50 steps, 40 steps, 30 then you see any guy. It's all wrong. You know? And it's there. You will see when you visualize, you withdraw your attention from outside. Rise above outward faculty. Mind is still. The feet of the soul is at like the eyes. Direct your attention just there, the place where the humanity and the third eye are single eyes there. You see that? It is going up, you see that? So those who got something that question, they should let loose all, to all questions. Let them say, and those who reply. Some of you write to me. This is where the proof is. I told you already, you come in. He writes, I want only all alone time with you. All right, I'll give it. You come here, sit inside the room and lock it up and keep the key with yourself. Don't come out unless your questions are in bed. This is what I tell them, what to do. Questions are the same nature in a different way put up, that's all. Unless you go up, you cannot see. When you're near the top of the roof, near the roof, then you see little glimpses of light. When you really go up, you see full light. So if that who have entered the plane of intellectual plane, they should be satisfied. Then these, all these seem to be explained, such and such master said, some sifat said, such and such said. Only for his little courage to take off, it appears to be correct. But he is not satisfied unless he sees for himself.
What's the explanation of the different colors of lights that are seen in meditation?
No book will give you. I didn't. But that is Jesus first. That is Jesus first. That depends on the inner race. Development background, some dominating attributes in his life, you see? That's the cause of all these different colors. So, yellow, golden light is spiritual. Pure milk, pure white light also. This is spiritual. So red light you will find here that there is some other rajogun driving, pushing attitude. So these are different stages, different colors, different samsara.
Are they different lights for different people, or are they the same progression of lights for everybody?
Those who have got background, they go up further. Those who have to start just from then, there is regular there. You see sky, you see stars, there will be stars, then stars and the moon comes, then stars and those who have got the background, they start all at once from there. That's it.
Because I was just thinking, every morning in here, when we meet, everybody sees various lights, and
yes.
We seem to be about on the same level, many of us.
Well, yes, some folks, some don't. They will see two masters.
Yeah, now that of course is beyond most of us. But
not beyond, I guess. Let us see, of course, those who are there will only have it. They talk to.
Blue light, I didn't touch on that. Everybody seems to see the blue light.
Yeah, that's the first.
Yeah.
Loving attitude. You see, the picture of Lord Krishna, blue. You see? Yellow, blue, and light. I mean golden light. These are three. Then the ugly form, you see? His face is blue, clothes are the yellow, and that is. That shows the combination of different judgments.
So really, when you start to meditate, you should try to get at that golden light as rapidly as possible.
You cannot visualize, you see. That comes after itself. when you reach that plane, that is that point. But that is, I told you, that is where master home manifests.
And these lights just seem to stay for a short time. Will that increase as time goes by?
By regular practice. Regular practice. And that time is increased only the longer you can stay in whatever you see, continues without break. The more progress is also there.
Suppose you have to scratch yourself, does that take you right back to the beginning again?
You are not risen above body consciousness.
Oh.
If you are risen above, you won't feel it.
Oh.
No, you won't. That means you are still not at the top of this room, you see. You are still on the way, 50 steps or 70 steps or something. You know?
Some people have said too that just about all the body consciousness disappears and there they are up above, but nothing else happens. That's where the grace of the Master enters in, isn't it?
Grace of the Master was the very first day when you initiate. It is there. Money is deposited in your name in the bank. That is why you go to the window to have the money. The more you can stay at the window, the more you can ask.
If you don't mind my saying
something. No, I don't mind anything. Do what's possible.
I think I've read in some books.
Books written by whom?
That the grace.
Written by whom?
Either
by whom, I tell you.
Either by you or by your master, Salman Singh.
Tell me. I hope I'm satisfied.
That the grace of the Master is at the pure discretion of the Master.
Surely.
Is that discretion sometimes... does that imply then that on occasion the Master might like someone more than someone else?
What? In the worldly man? Is he a worldly man?
No. I mean among initiates, shall we say.
Among initiates who are more obedient, is there more of them?
He gets more grace.
Grace, the more you turn your face, the more grace you have it.
Yes.
You touch your eyes in the room and you say, you see, don't see any light, then it is for you to come out.
Yes.
He has love, you see, that is why he initiates. Nobody, man may give clothes, may give money, may give buildings. Nobody gives his life. He gives you his life. His life is light and sound. He gives his life, his very life, to start with, so that you will do it. And so who can give? Here also, you find ways to give his blood. That we think is a very great sacrifice he has made. But he gives his life. His life is what word made flesh.
You placed a portion of your life in us.
Man, yes. Man who sees light within, he gives you light. When you have no life in you, how can you give light? For the burning lamp, you can light another lamp. But the lamp which is not already lit, how can you another lamp to be lit?
That gets me back to a question that I asked earlier, but which perhaps I didn't phrase well enough.
Yes.
That seems appropriate.
All right, welcome.
How should we behave in the presence of a master? Some of us aren't certain. Some of us wonder if we're doing the right thing, if we're according the correct courtesy and so on.
Quote him in whatever attitude you like, if you are really after the truth. You won't be annoyed by your question 101.
Yes.
You say, practice, loving. You may go to him even for criticism. You give in a very loving way, the reply to them. If he understands, he will change. People come like that also. They put so many 101 questions, and they when she, because I told you, many things are taught not by tongue. Only one third. Two thirds through direction. Twice. So when a man sits in front, his soul was either the windows of the soul, that also has two thirds, one third by word of mouth.
I mean, do you behave toward a master as one would toward an emperor?
Hmm? What? Take him as your elder brother. Take him as your father, as your friend. Just understand what he says. When you get something substantial, for which you bear out evidence yourself, it is so, then start, go on, what he says. The highest criterion, I think, is a master who is able to give you something to start, some capital to start. That capital is given only by raising you above the body corner, for a while. Whosoever can give you that, you can say safely, he's got something beyond. How great he is, I think when you know him, how great you become, that is even. In the early times when I went to my master, some people told me, how great is your master? So I told him, I don't know how great he is, that much I know for certain is more than I want. Very honest reply. If you know a guru or a master, you become a master. You cannot know. Very few people really know the master. They know only that much, some part of it. Whatever he condescends to give something to him.
While you are having this talk here with us tonight, are you having similar talks on other planes with more highly advanced of your initiates?
You see, the parties, they are not left alone, you see. Those who are not attached to the world, they are taken to the different planes where they are fit, to whatever stage they are advanced. If there is no attachment for the world left, except for the master, he will not be sent down to the man by demon. He will take the first second, then give him problems for further. He advises them there. But there is one thing to note. It takes much longer time to have that thing as compared to what you can have now in shorter time. What you can do in years there, you can do in months here. Why I press it? Why my master press? A learned man, you see, scholar, is only scholar after that when he is scholar while alive. If I go out of this building, it does not mean they have changed. Whatever we have done, we go to that place. From there we have to go. The more we can do it, the better.
But it must be done correctly.
And proper guidance and help. Help too.
Does incorrect meditation count in our favor?
It is as compared with not doing it better. That's what it says. But it is not. You won't have the progress here. One half is the great saint, Vapasya. He says, well, sit down in meditation at the door. Don't think whether he has heard it or not. Your duty is to sit at the door, quite cut off from the world. And that is all. Nothing more to do. Do it. Quite cut off from the world, then you have it. Why we don't transcend? Because we are tight. We have got so many entanglements.
Assuming that we are able to have complete concentration,
yes,
how long should it take ordinarily for our body to become completely numb?
When Master initiates, he takes you into Vinayagodha city, full sun, full moon, some classes full moon, the very first day initiation. It happens here. Then?
Yes.
It's about Dharanta, it is a little thought of it. Even as his own according to background, of course. But there are cases like that. Who class a big star, class sometimes moon, a sun also. It doesn't take long. One man put a question at you. I explain to you. I went to their home when I went to Palau, Vinayavita, in the time of my master. Then Vinayavita, when I went to my office on the way, I just entered their home, sit down, they were all sitting, husband and other brothers. How long it takes to leave the body, to be down. I told, do you want to know? All right, I said. The thought is dead. You see? It takes no time, only the custom is. That means practice, you see? That's the table. In the beginning, it is difficult. The very first day, how much you do, you see, you get something. That something only comes when you rise above the body consciousness or nearing the top. Isn't it? When we have to do it. This is very regular science that 2 and 2 make 4. No doubt about this, people can have and see. And that's the only criterion of the mark. No propaganda. Propaganda, people have with money, they do so much. One untruth. Propaganda is truth. 10 times, 20 times, that becomes as equal as truth.
I'm not sure of the exact wording of Tracy's question, but why is it that it's so much more difficult to listen to the sound than it is to look for the...
Because the mind is killed with that. Man would like to go into the opening of the cannon centered in there rather than hear the sound. Because hearing the sound fixes the mind forever. You engage in seeing, all right. But hearing the sound is difficult, you see. You say, my death is come. This is out of time.
You still want us to have exactly the same amount of sound listening as sight viewing?
That depends, you see, how far you would like to advance. Want to advance quicker, you would like to put in more time. Both are counterparts, light and sound. I say you give equal time, you advance quicker. But then we do not. Simply if you have the sound will drag you into because you see light. Well, I don't mean man must know where he's going. You see, both light is necessary to know where you are going. The sound will drag you like as if you do not know where you are going. So both things should do it. Sound is the guiding principle. Those who take up the only light, they are enveloped by light, do not know where to go further. There is the sound principle guides. If you are not well done, all these Hindu gentlemen, they disappear from this sound. But when they are grabbed by sound and light, they don't know what to do. Where to go? Both things go hand in hand.
I think somebody's trying to make some kind of signal, and I don't know what the meaning of it is.
What's that? You know the Kapha number?
I have no more questions.
No, to put it in the chat to the side now, you see. Find you out loud. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
No thanks. Thanks to Kelly Novello. And I told him the other day, thousands of dollars you make, you say, all right, thank you. You did a little taste of one thing, give me. So thank you, thank you. That was something. Miss not what I would say.
Should we stop saying thank you?
No, this is what I said. What? If I gave something from my own self, then also very good thanks. But I don't give anything from my own self. This is what I've got. Somebody's, what you say. Don't give it to me to look at. My master saw me very strength-safe. So he said, all right, go and have it and do it. Because it's not my... And my head is only kept in the... It's family. Man should put... I think it would be better if you put in with the sound principle, will give him more concentration. And sound principle is the only way to control the mind. Quicker way. Lord Krishna has in his lifetime that he plunged into the river Jamuna. There was a dragon with 100 heads. And he played on flute and controlled it. That's a metaphor. To show this mind, the 100-headed dragon within us. There are 100 ways to mislead us. If that can be controlled, only can be controlled by that sound. Guru Ramdas says, when you come in contact with Nam, mind is controlled. Nam is your consciousness. Things are very clear, you see, at daylight. Not difficult as people think. Again, I will say it is difficult to become a man. God is searching here. The ideal man. Kavi says, I am so purified now that God is after me, calling me Kabir, 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 he is after me, calling me like anything. Suppose you have got 4 or 5 sons. One son is very dutiful. He doesn't understand in a very inkling what is in his mind. He follows that without asking for it. Do you think father will not be out? Of course he will hear to every son, but he is the foremost to whom he will hand over all the keys to look after the instance of others too. He won't give keys to everybody. B-level, regulate pace. Take when we are initiated that God power resides in you. That is master power, Christ power. It won't leave you unless till the end of the world, unless it takes you to Satna. Further Satna takes you into further, advance you into this worldly state. Now, taking his vision, you one thing. And Father, don't purposely touch and break his commandments. Such a man is not to fear, not in this world, but in the 3 worlds. You keep all in way. Baba Jamal Singh, when you initiate somebody, you say, look here, I am now residing in you. Mind that? Don't do anything unlawful thing. This is very what Baba Jamal used to say. I am now sitting in you, residing in you. very huge. All right, then when they came back, all right, what have you done? How are you proceeding?
Good morning, everybody. The question and answer session you just heard was titled, To Him Who is Obedient. It was recorded on 16th September 1970. Our reader this morning is Rick Casey.
Good morning, Pradeep, and everyone. I'll be reading this morning from the PDF, the Japji, on the Ruhani Satsang website. The end of that PDF has this sketch of the life of Guru Nanak by Kirpal Singh, titled Guru Nanak and His Teachings, a Biographical Study. It appeared in Satsandesh, January 1970. Guru Nanak is not the sole monopoly of the Sikhs nor of India alone. He belongs to all mankind. He belongs to the world, and the world belongs to him. He bore witness to the glory of one God, one brotherhood, one law, the law of human fellowship and love. He came to reconcile all religions and all faiths. He came to harmonize all the scriptures of the world. He came to announce the ancient truth in the common man's language, the one wisdom that is so eloquent in the teachings of all the prophets, the apostles, the sages, and the seers, and to show that one flame of love shone in all the temples and shrines and sacraments of man. The love of God and the love of man were the very core of the message of Guru Nanak. We need to learn to serve the poor gently, quietly, unostentatiously, and to have reverence for all the saints of the past. This is the first great teaching of the Guru. When he went to Multan, the land of peers and fakirs, the latter sent him a bowl brimming over with milk, implying that the place was already full of saintly souls and there was hardly room for any more. Nanak, who knew the implication in the offer made, just took a jasmine flower and, placing it on the surface of the milk, returned the bowl, meaning thereby that he would float as lightly as the flower and give fragrance to all of them. The true saints, as a rule, have no quarrel with anybody. They talk gently and work quietly in the service of God and man. He traveled far and wide, unlike any other prophet who trod the earth before him. He undertook four long and arduous journeys on foot, each extending over a number of years, one to the north, into and across the snow-capped Himalayas, where he met the Lamas, the Siddhas, and the Naths, the Tibetans, and the Chinese. Second, eastward, into the modern states of United Provinces, Bengal, and Burma. Third, to the south, as far as Sangla Dwip, or the modern Ceylon, and the fourth, to the Middle East countries of Baluchistan, Afghanistan, Persia, Arabia, as far as Mecca, and Jerusalem, Turkestan, Egypt, Turkey. All these journeys covering well nigh 30 years in times when there was no satisfactory communications and transport worth the name. Guru Nanak's teachings revolutionized people in diverse ways. His teachings are of great interest today, as they were in his own time. The nascent Republic of India needs his inspiration in the task of rebuilding the nation on a sound footing, for India is still bristling with many problems, and its freedom is yet far from complete. Guru Nanak came at a crucial time in the history of India. The country, torn as it was by factional fights, was fast slipping into the hands of the Mughals. You get a glimpse of the chaotic conditions prevailing at the time from the words of no less an authority than the Guru himself. Kings are butchers. They treat their subjects with gruesome cruelty. The sense of duty has taken wings and vanished. Falsehood is rampant over the land, and a thick veil of darkness, darkness darker than the darkest night, hiding the face of the moon of truth. The Hindus and the Muslims were bitterly opposed to one another. The very semblance of religion had degenerated into formalism, and the spirit in man was stifled and suffocated by rites and rituals and by creeds and ceremonies. Too much importance was attached to the outer husk and shell at the cost of the kernel within. Casteism and untouchability were waxing like anything. The people were losing faith in themselves. The political and the social conditions in the country had reached the lowest ebb. The chaotic conditions could not be more chaotic. In the blessed name of religion, all kinds of atrocities were being perpetrated by those in power, swayed as they were by incontinence, greed, lust, and immorality. Mistrust and hatred were the order of the day. Both the rulers and the ruled had lost all sense of shame and decorum. In such a dark hour of history, Nanak appeared to set the house in order and to shape the destiny of millions of Indians. He went about preaching in the name of God, asking nothing for himself, but anxious only to serve the people and save them from degradation and downright damnation. Nanak saw the deep tragedy that was menacing the country. He saw the world caught in the pernicious web of suffering and woe. Moved by the piteous cries of the helpless and the afflicted people in their deep agony, he prayed for the glory of God, for the grace of God. O Lord, the whole world is being consumed by the invisible flames of fire. O save the world in this hour of darkness. Raise all up to Thee. Raise them in whatever and however a way Thou mayest. On coming into contact with Babar, the Mughal king requested the Guru to ask for some favor. He politely and yet firmly declined the offer, saying, "Hear, O king, foolish would be the fakir who would beg of kings, for God is the only giver, munificent beyond all measure." Significantly adding, "Nanak hungers for God alone, and he asks for naught." Babar had great respect for all men of piety. Once, when he came to know that Nanak had been put behind bars, he ordered his immediate release. On request from the king, the Guru gave his advice, called Nasihat Nama, in which he counseled the king to worship God every day and to be just and kind to everyone. He told him that the Nam, the Sat Nam, the holy word of God, or the Kalma, was a panacea for all ills of life here and in the hereafter. It was Halam Itadim, the most ancient song of God, singing in the heart of all, and could be heard only by the pure ones. "Be pure," said the Guru, "and the truth would reveal itself to thee. Have love of God uppermost in thy heart, and hurt not the feelings of his creatures. Once this great soul, great in humility and love of God, asked a school teacher, "Sir, what have you learned?" The school teacher replied, "I am proficient in all branches of knowledge. I have read the sacred lore of all the religions. I know quite a lot of everything." Then Nanak humbly inquired of the schoolmaster what he had actually gained thereby. In a passage of exquisite beauty and wisdom, Nanak saying of the secret of true education, "Burn worldly thoughts, and their ashes rub, and of these ashes might make thine ink, and let the paper on which ye write be the paper of faith, and write thou the name of God." When put to school, he told Gopal Pandhi, his teacher, to make the heart your pen, and with the ink of love write again and again the name of the Lord. The current system of education in India ignores the vital injunction, make the heart your pen, and make an ink of the worldly intellect. Worldly attainments of whatever type are not sufficient in themselves if one does not know God. We need a system of education which includes in its curriculum the eternal values of life. We have instead a commercialized course of cramming books and text made easy just for securing diplomas and degrees and getting jobs. The number of schools, colleges, and universities has increased in India and elsewhere, but the moral fiber of the so-called educated people has not grown by a millimeter. What does it profit a man if he gains possession of the whole world and loses his own soul? Democracies have failed, but a democracy can live, survive, and triumph when two conditions are fulfilled. One, when sectarianism and fanaticism perish, and two, when states bow in reverence to a superior law, the law of fellowship and human sympathy, and above all, to the infinite, whose voice rings from end to end. Children of the earth, ye all are one. Nanak came to proclaim this twofold truth. The real and lasting freedom cannot be achieved without faith in solidarity and freedom of humanity. How? By 1. Faith more than mere knowledge of books. 2. Solidarity more than schemes of reform. 3. Service of humanity more than anything else. Guru Nanak found the basic remedy for true solidarity and the integration of man in the love of God and in the love and service of God and man. Once, when he came out of a trance in the water, he explained, "There is no Hindu and no Muslim," meaning that there was no basic difference between the two. God made man with the same privileges all the world over. All are born equal. They come into the world in the same way after a fixed period of gestation. All men have the same outer and inner construction, the manner of limbs and various instruments and organs like hands and feet, lungs, liver, and stomach, and the like. Every day, the human machinery throws filth out of the body. One is first man and then takes on the outer badge of man, of one or the other specific social order or formation in which he is born and brought up, and these he accepts and adopts as his own. Hinduism, Sikhism, Islam or Christianity, Buddhism or Jainism, or any other ism, and tries to solve the mystery of life, each in his own way. A man is man first and man last, besides anything else in between. He belongs to the universal religion of God, with the hallmark of man based on birth and surroundings. The entire mankind consists of embodied beings like so many beads on a string of a rosary, all being equal in the sight of God, enjoy God's gifts equally and freely. None is high or low by birth alone. Further, he is a soul. He is soul, a conscious entity which enlivens the whole body. This soul, a drop in the ocean of all consciousness, is of the same essence as that of God. As such, we are all brothers and sisters in God, irrespective of our social badges. And then the same power, the Nam, or word, or kalma, keeps in order the entirely disparate constituents of the body, and then the soul, the one material and the other ethereal. On account of this controlling power, we cannot run out of the wonderful house of the body in which we live, however hard we may try. The outgoing breath is pushed back and cannot remain outside for any length of time. Our body works as long as the life principle runs in the body. This process goes on as long as the controlling power keeps the body and the life principle together. When that is withdrawn, the spirit in us has perforce to leave the body. So the whole machinery of the body is being run by the indwelling spirit that we are. If we could learn to withdraw at will from the body while remaining in the body, we can then know the nature of our real self, the animating life impulse in us. This has been the teachings of all the rishis and munis of yore and the spiritual teachings of the East and West. It is all a matter of practical self-analysis, and it can be experienced directly and immediately with the active help and guidance of an adept or a master of paravidya, or the knowledge of the beyond, the knowledge that lies beyond the senses, mind, and intellect. It is a regular science of soul, knowing which everything else becomes known, and nothing remains to be known. We can then become a master in our own house, able to direct it as we like. The same Nam, the Sat Nam, the word, or the God into expression power, is keeping the whole creation under its control. When this is withdrawn, the result is dissolution or grand dissolution, as the case may be. This body is verily the temple of God, in which we reside, and in which God also dwells. The whole universe is the abode of God, and God dwells therein. All this can be experienced at the level of the spirit, with the grace of a competent spiritual guide or mentor. As long as we do not perceive this unity of man, physically, mentally, and spiritually, and by the same controlling power within all of us, there can be no true integration and solidarity of humankind. A great creature of peace and harmony. One day, the guru went into the river Ravi for a bath. A voice came to him from the music of the waters, saying, O Nanak, I am with thee. I have given thee my name. To this name be thou dedicated. Repeat my name, Sat Nam. Mingle thou with men uncontaminated by the world. Worship my spirit and power. Meditate on my glory, and serve the poor and the needy as thyself. No sooner had he heard the call, he, like Buddha and Mahavira, left his hearth and home to bring men nearer to God, so that they might enjoy in fullness the ecstatic bliss lying untapped within. People wondered why he was forsaking his wife and children. To their taunts, the guru replied, I am leaving them to the care of him who cares for all of us. The world is in the grip of deadly flames, and I go to extinguish the invisible fire which is enveloping all mankind. If we look critically with the eye illumined by the Master, we will find that we are living in the holy hill of God. All places of worship have been made on the pattern of the human body, the God-made temple for our worship. The Hindu temples are dome-shaped at the top and the likeness of the human head. The mosques have the central and side domes, have arches and the shape of foreheads. The churches and synagogues have steeples tapering upward in the formation of a nose. Again, the faithful in the various religions believe that God is light and sound. The symbols of this inner light and sound adorn all our places of worship in imitation of the reality within. But the true worship lies in opening the inward eye, the single eye, or Shiv Netra, to see the divine light in unstopping the inner ears to hear the divine music, the Akash Bani, or the Bang-i-Ilahi. The outer performances, without having a glimpse of the spirit and power of God, the light and sound principle, are just like a blind man saying, God is light, though he has never known what light is. The manifestation of the Yoti or Nur within is a vision of God, or having a darshan, as it is called. All this and much more comes to the grace of a competent master. With this right perception and right understanding, there follows right speech and right actions all on their own. The kingdom of God, for which we so fervently pray day in and day out, will then actually come on the earth plane. It comes not by observation, lo, it is within thee, say all the sages and seers. Guru Nanak wanted to reform religion, to lift it from the formal and conventional to the simple and practical. Etymologically, the term religion comes from the roots re, back, and ligio or ligore, to bind. Religion, then, is something that binds and unites the soul to oversoul or God. When masters come, those who meet them and come into their close contact derive the maximum benefit of getting their souls linked with the manifested light and sound of God. The social religions come into being after the masters pass away. They are, no doubt, with a noble purpose, the purpose of keeping the teachings of their founders alive. As long as practical men remain in the social orders, the followers continue to get the benefit as before. Later on, for want of such practical men, the social orders acquire rigid formations and the very institutions set up with the noblest of intentions and the best of motives become ironclad prison houses, begin to stagnate and stink with hair-splitting polemics in which the spirit gets lost under the mass of dead verbiage. The purpose of religious education is to draw out the best in man and make him an integrated whole, physically, emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. That religion is best which turns out more and more ideal persons with a harmonious development in all their parts. The highest objective of Sikh religion is to turn out Khalsas. A Khalsa is one who witnesses within him the Puran Yoti, the supreme light of God in full effulgence. Similarly, a Hindu is one who makes manifest in him the Yoti of Ishvara and listens to the unending and unstruck music of the soul, Anhad and Anhat Nad, the symbols of which he adores and worships outside in his temples and shrines by lighting candles and striking bells. A true Muslim is one who sees the Noor of Allah, or the light of God, and hears the Kalam-i-Kadim, the voice of God, the most ancient music or song ceaselessly going on within him. A true Christian, likewise, is one who bears testimony to the light of God and hears the sound of God, which transforms him into an awakened spirit at the Mount of Transfiguration. Guru Nanak put great emphasis on direct experience of the divinity that lies within us. For mere reading of the scriptures and observing the rites and rituals of worship cannot take the place of the reality. These are the elementary steps, but not enough in themselves. Nanak was a poet saint and a bard of the open secret, a preacher of the spirit and power of God in living the humankind. He went from place to place, chanting the sacred name and preaching the love of God. He visited Hindu places of pilgrimages, the Muslim shrines, and other holy places. Closer is he than the very life breath and nearer than the hands and feet. As Lotzi said, without going out of doors, we may yet know the essence of the world. This essence is called the Nam, the Sat Nam, the eternal word. His life was dedicated to preaching the practice of the holy word. He taught the people that in the holy word was hidden a great healing power which healed all the ills of life. Well, I've come to the end of my time. I was reading from the addendum to the Japji, a biographical sketch of the life of Guru Nanak. Thank you, Master, for everything.
Thank you, Rick, for reading for us. 88 of us attended today's satsang. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Master, for for providing this for us.
You say that at the feet of the Lord over it. We had the good fortune to have seen him with these physical eyes, moving on earth in all humility of saints and humility personified, showering his blessings all round to all who came to his feet.